Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Know-How is brought to you by CashFly.
This episode of Know-How is brought to you by WordPress. Make WordPress.com your online home. Plans start at just $4 a month. Go to WordPress.com/know-how to get 15% off your brand new website today. Today on Know-How,
inspect your meltdown,
balancing your props,
and maybe testing the 2018 Alien X, I don't know.
And one of my favorite things from CES 2018. It's a Twitch show where we build, bend, break, kick, and upgrade. I am Father Robert Palliser.
And I'm Jason Howell, ready to upgrade.
That's right. And for the next couple of minutes, we're going to be upgrading the mind that you have in your knowledge hole with stuff that we're giving to...
That's not anytime you say knowledge hole, it just I was with you until knowledge hole.
Well, it makes me feel sad because I miss the old no hole in the old place.
That's true.
The new studio is a proper studio. It's nice. It's wonderful. Yeah. But there was something about all that space where we could just... we would affectionately call Burke out.
It was, which is pretty appropriate. I mean, it was a true cave. It was a cave of technology.
And you want a man cave. This thing had a full-on, like, multiple-person-sized bean bag. They had the old arcade. All the old parts for things that were like, we never had these. Why are these here?
Yep. And it was all hidden.
Also, there was that one corner with all of Leo's old stuff that he had just forgotten and thrown away.
No, that was the entire basement.
Basically, people, what you don't realize that the old studio was in lieu of having a storage unit for Leo.
Yeah.
And it was awesome.
Oh, tons of space. So it was like an archive of technology dating back to the 70s under there. Probably even farther than that.
Yeah, I kind of miss the tech museum aspect of it.
Absolutely.
But we're not here to reminisce about the tech museum. We actually have a fun, packed show for you. We're going to be taking you through a little software that you need to be downloading because we have to protect yourself against Melter and Speckdown. Actually, Melter and Speckdown sounds like a better name.
That's when the hackers that create or that discovered this transform it into something completely
different.
That's right. It evolves to Melter and Speckdown.
It's new. It's for you. We're also going to show you how to balance your props. If you've ever done any sort of multi-rotor flying and you've gotten the jello effect, I've got a quick fix for that. And then Jason is going to help us when we start assembling and testing our Alien X. And of course, I got to show you a little something from CES. Because by the way, Jason, I am back.
No, welcome back. Wow, I thought you were a hologram.
It's
nice to see you again.
Actually, it would have been good if I was a hologram there because then I probably wouldn't have come back with a flu.
Yeah, in the future, in the real future, everyone will go to CES as holograms. No one will get sick.
Yeah, it'll be great. Well, the thing is, I think I actually, because I got sick before I went to CES. That Friday before, I was already feeling kind of like.
That's a horrible way to start a trip like that.
I think I got it from a say. So.
Hey.
When you're sick,
you just called to say how.
I did. But then I was sick, so I think I picked something up because I got even like when I got back after screensavers, I felt so bad. I slept for 4 days.
You need a break.
I do need a break, which I won't get because I'm going to Rome next week, which is why we pre-recorded next week's episode. But let's move to something that's
let's get to the glorious stuff.
Now I got a tweet, an email a couple of days ago on the TWiT list from Steve Gibson, and Steve Gibson had said, look. I know a lot of people are freaking out about Melter. I call it
okay, just
Spectre
own it.
And own Meltdown. And I want to make them a little bit easier. So if you go to my computer, Alex, he wrote a teeny tiny little program. This is like 120-some-K. It's tiny. And he said it would have been even smaller if he didn't have to put in a picture, an icon, so that Windows 10 would treat it properly. It's got no installer. It just runs.
It
was written in assembly. It is fantastic. I just ran it here. He calls it Inspector. And what it actually does is it looks to see if your system is vulnerable to Meltdown and Spectre. Now, this one is kind of interesting because I haven't yet patched this computer. But it says it's not vulnerable to Meltdown. It is vulnerable to Spectre because I haven't updated the BIOS on anything. I'll have to take a look at that. He also allows you to enable or disable protection once it has been patched, which is a really good way for you to say turn off protection and then see how it affects your applications.
So you're like undoing the patch?
Yeah.
At that
yeah.
case?
Not you're not uninstalling the patch, you're just turning off the protection that the patch enabled.
Muting it.
Yeah. this is actually becoming a big thing. Intel made a big stink at CES. When you would come to the booth and you would even mention Meltdown or Spectre,
man.
You could tell like they had trained.
They had been, yeah, I was going to say, they had been heavily educated CES.
And which is right. I mean, that's not nefarious. They should have done
right.
that. But three people, and they gave me the exact same response. It's like, okay, so they drilled this into you.
Right.
And they were saying, oh, yeah, we think it's going to be a negligible performance hit, so on and so forth. And I get that. For most people, you're not going to really see this because you rarely use 100% of your CPU.
Hmm.
So even if it is a 25 to 30% performance hit, which some of these benchmarks are showing, you shouldn't really notice. Where you will notice is when you're switching back and forth between user access and kernel access a lot, because you're gonna find that it takes a while to dump cache and then restart it.
Okay.
And
the everyday user not gonna run into this. Who is most likely to run into this?
Anyone who really maxes out their computer. So if you actually, I've already figured this part out. If you use a lot of multimedia suites that can use 100% of like all of the cores of your CPUs, and that switch back and forth between system operations like disk access, a lot of I/O, and user access, so the actual software, you will notice it.
Hmm.
And in fact, I'm seeing somewhere between a 12 to 32% hit on my rendering performance right now, and that's not cool.
Wow.
I mean, that's why I bought those machines. But mine is an edge case. Most people aren't going to be doing that. The ones who are going to feel the pain the most are anyone who has these CPUs inside of data centers, because those are huge I/O. That's always mm-hmm. doing I/O, and mm-hmm. they've also done virtualization, so they're switching between processes all the time, and that's what it's designed to do.
Wow.
I would not be surprised if you see some sort of class action lawsuit, or maybe not even a lawsuit, a threat of a lawsuit from some of the big cloud competitors,
right.
Amazon, Microsoft, Google, even Apple, saying, look, we bought literally millions of dollars worth of your hardware, and we just took a huge hit.
Yeah, maybe it's the core of their business right there.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's front and center. Everyone that uses those cloud services, they're going to notice that.
Precisely. I mean, cloud services, the whole reason why they're efficient is because they can peg the CPU. They can pile processes onto a single core until it's pegged, and then they spin up the next one, and the next one, and the
right.
next one. A 30% hit to them means they need to buy 30% more hardware to get the same performance.
Ooh.
That's not doable. That's definitely not tenable. That's not something that they're going to forgive easily. So those are the ones who I think are going to complain. But still, if you get a chance, just go to we put the link in our show notes. It's grc.com. You're going to be able to download this, check really quickly. It'll give you a peace of mind of knowing whether or not you are protected, and then you can move on.
Yep, grc.com/inspector.htm.
Indeed. All right, Jason, now let's go and jump into the heart of our episode.
Crack, 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 crack.
All right. Have you ever seen those multi-rotor videos where it seems like the picture is shimmering?
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's, you know it has the potential, but there's just that tiny little shake,
yep.
and sometimes it vibrates at just the right speed that you get these weird little lines passing
yep.
through, and yes, I've seen that definitely.
Yeah, it's that sympathetic vibration.
Yeah.
So, it might be okay, but then you throttle up the engines to just the right
yep.
speed, just the right RPM, where suddenly the entire thing starts to shake, and then it kind of passes through, and
yeah.
it's okay. Now, a lot of people have put a lot of money into negating that effect, and they'll put gimbals on their multi-rotors that are isolated from the frame. They've got rubber dampeners, and they've got active electronics that will keep it from showing the vibration. But that's a lot of symptomatic removal that you wouldn't have to do if you just started with the actual problem.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem isn't that quadcopters vibrate, because all quadcopters vibrate. It's that if you do not balance your props, you will get to a point at which that vibration will become just the right frequency where it shakes the entire frame.
Mm.
So what we can do, very, very simple preventative maintenance here, is balance the props before we put it on our quadcopter, on our Alien X, so that when we do have the full quad running, we'll minimize the amount of jello.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the way we're going to do it is, if you're, you know, why don't you hold that? And that's like a little lollipop for you.
Oh, sorry.
Now, if Alex was on his ball, he could have had you and just like electronically taken you away from the from the studio.
Why weren't you on top of that, Alex?
Come on, Alex. Get in the game. No, but what this will do, this is a very simple prop balancer from Dubro. If you go to that link there, Alex, it's about $25. It's worth every penny. Because what this will let you do is it will let you balance the props with a very simple method. And once you've got your props balanced, they're just not going to vibrate nearly as much as they do. When you're setting this thing up, this is actually a multi-use prop balancer. So I've got several different slots. I depending on the prop size, I can raise this or lower it depending on how big my props might be. And all I need is a bubble level. I just need to see in this particular case, this one's a little bit on level.
Yeah.
So I'm going to come down. There we go. All right, about a little higher, a little lower. Okay, and lock. So I'm going to lock that in. So now I've got a level plane between these two. What I've done is I've gone ahead and I've put this prop on this on the balance rod. And the way that I do that is actually quite simple. This is on a spring-loaded tube that has this little silicone to hold it back. And it's got these little compression washers that hold it on. So we've got the prop that's held on by the little spring load and the washer here. I'm going to go and slip the silicone back on. And what this will do is it will hold that prop tight. So now this is pretty much on there, but it's not part of the rod.
Oh, I see. It's going to turn with those as well. Okay, I was thinking.
Precisely. Whole assembly is going to turn.
It. Yep.
And then I will go ahead and put this in between here. Now, what I would ideally, the way that this would work is if this was perfectly balanced, then it would stay. When I release this, it would just stay where it is because everything's balanced properly. Or it would move very slowly based on how high quality my my prop balancer. So let's see how balanced this is. Okay, that's not balanced at all. So this is telling me that this part of the prop is way heavier than that. That kind of quick motion, if I spin this up, there will be a point at which the prop is literally trying to tear itself apart. And that's going to translate into motion and vibration on
now,
the arm.
I imagine probably the very first thing you should do is make sure that the surface you're putting it on is straight as well, right?
Yeah, the surface, I mean, anything that you have that's like my workbench has all been leveled out.
Yeah.
But as long as I've got this plane balanced,
right,
I could have the table out of balance and it would still be okay. I'm adjustable on both sides. Okay, so now the way we can fix this is we could fix it in multiple ways. I could sand the heavier side. And on the nylon props that I've used, that's what I've done. I just sort of shave away some of the material a little bit at a time until it doesn't dip quite as quickly. Mm-hmm. In this particular case, because it's carbon fiber, you don't want to do that. If you sand carbon fiber, what will happen is you will delaminate it, and then it will just fall apart.
Yeah.
And by the way, when you're using carbon fiber, just be careful because nylon tends to bend. Carbon fiber tends to snap. And when carbon fiber snaps, it's sharp.
Yeah, very sharp.
It's a knife. So what we're going to do is I've got some tape here, and I'm going to put little pieces of tape onto the side of the prop that's not as heavy. And I'm
so you're basically going to balance it with that.
I'm going to
balance it. And then weigh the tape afterwards?
No. Or? I mean, it's going to be, I have to do every prop individually. So I need four props for my Alien X. I will probably do 16 of these because I'm going to want the set I'm using plus three complete sets of spares.
Time consuming.
It is time consuming. But you know what? This is something that you can do kind of, you know, chill. Yeah. So I'm going to start with a smallish piece of tape here. Let's just take a single strip. One of the things you also want to be aware of, don't add too many pieces. If you find that you're adding like six pieces of tape, just tear it off and make a larger piece of tape.
Yeah, right, and start there.
Yeah, because otherwise what will happen is you'll end up like, as you spin, you might lose a piece, and suddenly it's out of balance again.
Right.
So let's go ahead and just do this, add this.
And these are just going to live on there going forward.
Yeah, no, they will. I mean, you can barely, if you go to the overhead, you can barely see these.
Oh, yeah, totally.
All right, so let's go ahead and try this again. If you go to the side shot, let's see how fast this goes. Okay, it's still unbalanced, but that went way slower than the first time. So it means I'm getting closer to my equilibrium point. So let's go ahead and I'm actually going to scrape off this old piece of tape. because just like I said, I don't want to put too many of these.
Right.
And now I know that it needs to be bigger than that. It needs to be bigger than that size. So I'm going to double the size of that, and let's see. Let's say about that big. Okay.
It's kind of amazing that a strip of tape has this much.
Yeah, but we're talking, change. You know, it's less than milligrams.
Yeah, yeah.
You really don't need that much. The props aren't that heavy, but the problem is when you get them spinning up that fast, that's a lot of energy.
Absolutely is.
All right, yeah. Here we go. So let's try it again.
Drum roll, please.
Oh, I want it.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay, so that's... There we go.
That's kind of what you want, right?
That's actually what we want. We want both sides
Dang,
to be kind of level.
Dang, that was easy.
That was easy, right?
All right.
And you do that for all the props that you have. And if you get them balanced enough, what's going to happen is you'll be able to get those beautiful shots without the Jell-O.
That's cool. And yeah, the tape just kind of blends right in there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it looks great. I wouldn't even know that there was tape under there, and you certainly won't when you see it in the sky.
Now, one thing, though, if you're like me and you tend to hit things when you're flying, especially once you get to the larger props, every time you do that, you kind of have to rebalance the props.
All of them.
If I'm going that fast, I don't know which ones might have come into contact
that's
with
true.
Something.
Okay.
I mean, I will visually inspect all my props. If there's a gouge, I just take that prop out.
Right.
But you know, anytime some material may have come off from a prop, maybe a piece of tape has been ripped off from the prop, I will always rebalance. And in fact, when I put my quads away for the winter and then I come back, I do the entire process over again.
Mm-hmm.
And as you can see, I mean, we're doing it in front of camera. I can go through 16 props in about 5 minutes. This is not once you've got the workbench set up, this is not a long process. You just keep doing it,
right.
And doing it, and doing it until you get it balanced.
So obviously, doing this will improve the quality of the video that you're shooting on the drone. Should I call it drone?
Yeah. Some people get really ticked off when
I know. But, I remember you mentioning that.
But I say drone. Yeah,
okay.
Drone.
What about other tangible benefits? Like, do you notice better performance and control, that sort of stuff? Because, I mean, you're stabilizing the plane. Even.
Yeah, anytime. You have to remember, the whole thing about a quad, we talked about this 2 weeks ago when we discussed how a multirotor works. Because they don't have any control surfaces, the only control you have over a multirotor is the thrust. And anytime you have something that's taking energy away from the thrust, that means you are degrading your control of the multirotor. Vibration has to have energy coming from someplace.
Yep.
It's coming from the motors. It's coming from the props being unbalanced. So if I can eliminate the vibration, that's just a tiny bit more energy that I'm not sucking away into some other physical process that's happening on the quadcopter. So, yes, you will see increased control. Now, On a quad as big as the Alien X, am I going to see marked control increase? No. And when I'm dealing with the smaller quads, most of the time I don't even balance those props because the props are so small and honestly they never last that long because I'm always crashing them into the ground. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really matter. But when I'm going for those super steady shots, I will again put so much time before the flight rather than trying to fix it in post. And you're an editor as well, so you understand this.
Mm-hmm.
1 minute fix before can equal an hour fix after.
Oh, man, that's so true. And not even in just editing. It's true in so many ways.
It's basically,
if you just fix it at the source, it's going to save you so much time and headache down the line.
Now, one other thing. I kind of like these props. I bought a bunch of those carbon fibers, and I've stuck with them. But these are the ones that have the nuts that are built into the prop.
Yeah.
So I don't have to put the prop on and then the nut on top. These are slightly different. If you go to the side of the overhead, Alex, you'll notice there is no place for me to put the rod through the prop. And so in that tester, you can actually also opt to get the version that has this. So it's designed to fit into the nut, and there's a counter rotation and rotation side. So this is the rotation side. There we go, and it just goes like that. Same process, but now I'm balancing off the end there. And as you can tell, this prop is a little bit heavy on that other side. So let's do the same thing. Actually, why don't you try this one, Jason?
All right.
Let's see your balance foo here.
And I'm taping the side that's popping up here.
Yeah.
Let's see if I.
And this is not too bad. I mean, if I put this flat, that moves pretty slowly. But this is a big prop, so you're going to need a little bit more tape than the other one.
Okay. I'm not so sure this is enough, but I'm going to go ahead and go with it here. I'll put that on there. Uh-oh.
That's okay. That's
all right. Does it matter when it hangs off the side like that?
Yeah, no.
All right. We'll fold it around like that. Okay. And then sideways like that. Make sure it's still. Oh, I put on too much.
Yeah, now it's. Right? Actually, so you want this, that little slot in there?
Oh, I see. Okay, so maybe.
Whoa. That's kind of heavy.
Oh, maybe.
Actually, no, you're good.
Yes. First try.
Wow, that was the first try. That's not bad.
You know, I was meant to do this.
Yeah. And then you can do this thing where, you know, the kids, they fly away.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I'm going to put it on my hat.
No, don't do that. So again, get yourself one of these tools. If you are serious about doing any sort of aerial photography or aerial videography, the worst thing that can happen is that Jello.
Yeah.
Because that tells people, oh, it's a drone.
It really immediately does kind of ruin the footage. Even if you're able to stabilize it, sometimes when you stabilize shaken video like
that, it stretches.
It's like the outlines of things are kind of blurry where they would be sharp otherwise. So you just want to fix it at the source.
Well, the ultimate compliment that you can get when you are making drone footage, especially drone videography, is people saying, I couldn't tell if that was a drone or a crane shot. That's what you want.
If they
think that you might have brought out a crane for it, then you did it the right way. If they look at it and go, oh, that's a cool drone shot.
That
means that they saw just enough vibration to tell them this couldn't have been done by a professional device.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Now, when we come back, Jason, you know what we got?
What?
We got to test that Alien X. So last week, we showed people how to assemble one of these monsters. This week, we got to show them how to actually test it and get it ready to fly. But before we do that, you know what we should do?
We should thank a sponsor. And you sit this one out.
I'm going to sit this one out because, you know what, I don't want to give my CES flu to our sponsor.
Or to me, please.
Or to you.
So just don't breathe on me right now. This episode of Know How is brought to you by WordPress. You probably know all about WordPress. I mean, WordPress sites are all over the web. We've used them. We love them. They look beautiful. We all know that building, something new, something that others are going to connect with, like they do on the internet, is a lot easier if you have the right tools. Maybe you aren't a brilliant web designer, and that's why WordPress is so awesome. They give you the tools. They make the whole process easy for you. We're excited to have WordPress.com as a sponsor. We use WordPress.com every day, and, I mean, let me tell you, whether you're looking to create a personal blog or a business site, or both, or all of the above, whatever your use case is, creating a website on WordPress.com helps others find you, remember you, and connect with you, and that's what it's all about. You don't need experience. You don't need to hire someone, thankfully. WordPress.com guides you through the entire process from beginning to end. They take care of the technical stuff. That's the stuff that always threw me when I thought I knew more about web design than I actually did. So it's easy to get your site up and running. They lay it out in a very sensible way. They have hundreds of beautiful designs that you can choose from as starting points. You just select a design and go for it, and you can kind of customize and tweak from there. You'll get built-in search engine optimization and social sharing, so they take care of that stuff to make it even more known. Their business plan lets you access hundreds of plugins and themes. They also have excellent customer support. Their team is made up of WordPress experts eager to help you get the most from your site. They are, in fact, available to help 24 hours a day, Monday through Friday, and, oh, by the way, weekends too. Plans start at just $4 per month, and you should check it out. Come see why 29% of all websites, it's kind of crazy, run on WordPress. Get started today with 15% off any new plan purchase. Go to WordPress.com/knowhow to create your website. You're going to fall in love with it, and you can find the right plan that's just right for you. That's WordPress.com/knowhow for 15% off your brand new website. And we thank WordPress for their support of Know How and the TWiT Network.
Indeed. You're right, 29%. That's kind of a crazy number. When
no big deal. What? Just 30% of all internet websites.
1%. You said 1% of all websites. Like, wow, that's a lot. 29%. That can't be
right. It really
is
kind of crazy.
Okay. Now, folks, we understand that just physically putting together a multi-rotor is fun, But if you don't do the time into actually getting the electronics right, into balancing it, into making sure it's ready to fly, all you've done is created a really, really good-looking crater in the making. So without further ado, let's take you to testing the 2018 Alien X.
In the last episode of Project Alien X, we physically integrated the mechanical and electrical systems of our quadcopter. In this segment, we're going to set up the radio and flight controller, check the rotation of our motors, experiment with center of gravity, and get our Alien X ready for its maiden flight. First, we need to set up our radio and make sure it's properly sending commands to the flight controller. Our receiver is an unbound FlySky 6-channel unit, but if your radio is already bound or you have a different set, you can skip to the flight controller segment. We bind our receiver to our transmitter using a bind plug, which is essentially a connector that shorts pins to each other. Plug the connector into the battery slot on the receiver, then power up the Alien X. The status light on the receiver should start to quick flash. Now take your transmitter, and while holding the bind button on the rear of the unit, turn it on. The status light on the receiver should stop flashing, indicating that the receiver is now bound to the transmitter. Remove the battery from the Alien X. If you're using your transmitter with several receivers, this is a good time to set up another flight profile so that you can store specific subtrims, throttle curves, and channel settings for each of your craft. Cycle your transmitter, reconnect power to the Alien X, and the KK screen will report an error, because it hasn't yet been configured. The four buttons below the screen from left to right are back, up, down, and enter. Hit enter to drop into the menu. Our first stop is receiver test. Highlight the option, then hit enter. You'll be given a screen that shows you the values the flight controller is getting from the receiver. We need to check that the right control inputs are going into the right channels and that their directions are not reversed. Assuming that you're using a Mode 2 transmitter, pushing full forward on your right stick should change the elevator value to forward, while pulling full back will change it to back. Pushing the right stick to the left should change the aileron value to left, while pushing it to the right should change it to right. Pushing the left stick all the way back should bring the throttle to idle, while pushing it forward should bring the throttle to full. Pushing the left stick to your left and right should change rudder to left and right, respectively. Flipping your auxiliary 5 channel should toggle auxiliary between on and off. If any of those inputs didn't cause the appropriate response in the flight controller, you need to recheck your receiver to flight controller wiring and or reverse a few channels on your transmitter. Staying in receiver test, the next step is to set the subtrims. You want your elevator, aileron, and yaw values to be zero when the sticks are at rest, and you want your throttle to read zero when it's pulled all the way back. Adjust the subtrim controls on your transmitter until you get as close to zero for those values as possible. Now let's set the craft type. Scroll down until you're highlighting Load Motor Layout, then press Enter. This is the menu that lets us tell the controller what kind of craft it will be controlling. Navigate to Quadcopter X Mode and hit Enter. You'll be asked to confirm your selection. Hit Yes. The following screen will show you ESC arm assignments and motor rotations. This is a good reference if you ever need to troubleshoot your electrical system. Now let's back out of motor layout and navigate to ACC calibration and hit Enter. This function will calibrate all of the accelerometers on the flight controller to assume that its current position is level. For that reason, you want your quad to be on a level, vibration-free surface before hitting Continue. Once you press Enter, don't touch the Alien X again until the screen reports that calibration is complete. Self-level is the flight controller function that will automatically adjust motor speeds to keep the craft level. Navigate to Mode Settings and hit Enter. The first entry should be labeled Self-Level, and it should read AUGS. If it doesn't, change it to AUGS. This setting allows you to toggle the KK self-leveling function from your transmitter at any time, simply by switching Auxiliary Channel 5. This is a great tool if you want to practice manual flight while having the option of switching self-leveling back on if you start to lose control. Back out of mode settings and navigate to self-level and hit enter. We'll go in-depth into the P and I settings in a future episode, but for now set P for 30 and I for 20. With the flight controller squared away, it's time to check the rotation of your motors. Important note, always do this with the propellers off. In fact, you should work with your electronics always with the propellers off. Remember that we want motors 1 and 3 to spin clockwise, while 2 and 4 should turn counterclockwise. Back the menu to the save screen, then push the left stick all the way down and to the right. You should hear the flight controller beep, telling you that the motors are armed. Advance the throttle slowly until the motors start spinning.
Then back the throttle off and watch motor 1 to see its rotation as it slows. A piece of tape on the shaft will help you see which way it's spinning. Repeat the process until you know the current rotation of every motor. Save the motors by pushing the throttle down and to the left and power down your Alien X. If any of the motors are not spinning in the right direction, you simply swap any two of the motor leads. It doesn't matter which two. Power the Alien X back up and try the test again. Once you've verified that they're all spinning in the proper direction, we can now calibrate the ESCs. Start the process by turning everything off. Turn on your transmitter and advance the throttle to full. Hold down buttons 1 and 4 on the KK and continue to hold them through the entire process. Connect the battery and the controller will enter pass-through mode. You'll hear a beep once all four ESCs have calibrated for 100% throttle. Continue to hold the KK buttons and move the throttle to idle. You'll hear another set of beeps to confirm calibration of 0% throttle. Release the KK buttons and disconnect the battery. Now it's time to install your propellers. Once again, remembering rotation, you want clockwise props on motors 1 and 3 and counterclockwise on 2 and 4. If you get confused, just remember that you want the prop turning in a way that its pitch will push air down. If you used Emax motors and the carbon fiber props that I suggested, then the props have a D design that will lock them onto the motor shafts. Once in position, lock them with the prop nuts. The last step in tuning our Alien X is to balance it. We want the center of gravity to be the center of the flight controller. Luckily, there are two holes to either side of the flight controller mount. I made a balance hook out of a wire coat hanger that will grab the Alien X by those holes and allow me to see if the craft is level. Being an elongated X craft, we're most concerned with leveling the front and rear, and the balance of the craft can vary wildly depending on whether or not you have a camera mounted on the clean plate. Luckily, we can move the placement of the battery to balance against weight that is or is not in the front. There are many methods to secure batteries to the Alien X, but I like to use a Velcro strap in conjunction with Velcro pads on the lower frame and battery. Holding the craft with my wire hook, I can shift the battery forward and aft in order to achieve balance. With our center of gravity set, it's time to check our handiwork. Put the Alien X on a level surface, turn on your transmitter, connect the battery to the ESCs, and verify that the KK is in safe mode and that auto level is off. Stand about 6 feet behind the craft and arm your motors. Advance the throttle to about 30%. You want the prop spinning, but not fast enough to lift the quad off the ground. If the Alien X starts to lift off, reduce throttle. Move the right stick forward and check to see if the craft lifts off the rear landing struts. You may need to throttle up slightly if full forward doesn't do anything. Pull back to see if it leans back on the rear struts. Remember that we want just enough power to lean. If you pull too much or give too much power while testing, you'll flip the quad and break at least the prop, so be gentle. Do the same test for the left and right movements and yaw. If everything checks out, then you're ready to fly. And next time, we're going to do just that.
Having the battery be able to shift back and forth in order to, like, prior to seeing that, I was like, well, man, what does that mean? You have to take the whole dang thing apart. That's pretty convenient, though.
No, just chopping pieces off.
Shaving it off with...
And a lot of people skip that step because they get so excited. Yeah. I understand that. The first time I did, I skipped it as well. And then I realized how out of balance it was. What that will do is it's not just that it makes the control a bit more difficult. It sucks away performance. Mm-hmm. Because, again, back to the explanation of how a multirotor works, because they only have thrust to control, if you have an unbalanced craft, so that let's say it's tail heavy, the motors on the back end have to work harder to bring it up to level. Mm-hmm. So when you're level, they might be running at 90%, whereas the front motors are running at 60%. Mm. Well, that means that you've only got 10% headroom on the back, which is going to decrease the amount of performance you can get moving the craft forward. And that works the same for any of the directions. So a perfectly balanced craft is a good way to make sure that all of the energy you're pouring into your multirotor goes in the direction that you want it to go.
It makes a lot of sense.
It does. Oh, now let's do just a quick exercise. We're going to do this again when we get your full craft assembled, which I think we're doing actually next week, assuming that I don't come back from Rome sick. Which I shouldn't, because they don't have the flu in Rome.
No. Rome, there's no such thing as the flu in Rome.
No. kidding me? That's the Eternal City, not the Sick City. Now, I've got you a tiny little trainer here. This is the reason why we're doing this is because this won't kill anyone if you crash into people. But now, I do think people should always start with a trainer. And actually, Alex, if you go to that link there, the one I always recommend is this, the SEMA X5 or the X5C, because I don't think they sell just the X5 anymore. It's $35. The nice thing about that X5 is that it is virtually indestructible, it's cheap, and when you hit things, it's not going to break them.
Right.
So a lot of people, when they get their quad the first time, they just want to gun it and and again, that's a really good way to get the quad as quick as possible to the crater it's going to make.
Okay.
What we want to do is we want to build up the connections between your brain, your hands, and what the quad will actually do.
Okay.
This is a little smaller than I'm used to. I like it to typically be a little bit larger than this, so it acts like the larger quads. But the very first thing is hovering. And this is harder than it looks, because people think, oh, if I add power, it will go straight up. No, because go to the overhead, Alex, spin it up a little bit. What's happening right now is you're actually getting uneven thrust, because the airflow is bouncing up against the mat, it's bouncing against the sides, and what's happening is it's creating this turbulence. So you're going to have to use the control stick to try to keep it in the same place. So, yeah, get yourself a bit more power. Okay, come back, a little bit forward, a little back forward, there we go, forward, forward. So, yeah, try to keep it over the Twit logo as much as possible.
Easy for you to say, Padre.
No, but this is exactly how you practice.
Yeah.
You start to get a feel. There's a little bit of a lag between you giving it throttle and it responding, or you taking away throttle and it coming back down. So you have to start to learn to gauge that. You have to start to understand that, you know what, if you go too much to the right, you can't just throw it all the way to the left, otherwise you just start oscillating.
Is it going to throw me off a little bit that, like, I'm not staring at the... Don't you have to be, like, facing...
Yeah. You kind of want the blue lights to be staring it, or the green lights staring you in the eyes, because now it's what's called nose out.
Right. And it's going to correlate with... Why is it my instinct to, like, pull back the second it starts doing that? Of course it's going to crash.
Yeah. Well, and again, it's that lag. Your brain has to account for that lag between acceleration and lift. There we go. Okay. Now, when we move to the full-size quad,
don't
try crashing it until you've got a bit more practice.
I don't know why I did that. That hurt. It wasn't horrible, but it hurt.
It was a little nip. All right, give it a little gas.
This is really hard.
It's harder on a small quad than it is on a full-size. Okay, it's good.
It's like, you know what it is? You know what's throwing me off? It's like, I feel like if I keep it in the same spot, like if I get it to where it's just lifting off, I feel like, great, I'm there.
And
then suddenly it starts to go faster.
Very good point. And a lot of people get spooked by that, because what will happen is they'll like have it right here, mm-hmm. and they'll go, oh, I'm good. No, you're not, because you're getting what's called the ground effect. Right, because the thrust, the airflow is actually bouncing off the surface and coming back up. And so it gives you the feeling that you're having lift, and you're not actually having lift yet. So you have to actually get it to about here before you're actually getting true lift.
On something like this, is there a place where I can get it and like in a room that has no draft or anything, and I can just pin it at a certain point, and it'll stay like in the same spot?
Eventually you will get to that point. You couldn't do it with this. The controls are so sensitive on this, because it's so small.
The distance is very small.
Yeah. You can do it on, like, in the SEMA X5. Yes, absolutely. Okay. This is a bit trickier. So a little higher. A little bit higher. A little higher. A little lower. Oh, camera. Okay. This is, believe it or not, this is actually good. You're actually doing a good job. It's
kind of.
Nothing is broken. Nothing is dead yet. So, and actually,
all right, apparently I need to practice a lot.
No, to show you, again, this is a toy, so this is way more twitchy than the real thing.
I want to watch a professional do this. Oh my goodness, look at that.
So again, baby steps. If you panic and you start going back and forth, what's going to happen is the craft will just oscillate out of control.
Yeah.
It's much more difficult with these tiny little ones, because the difference between going way out of control and, you know, being completely in control is just a couple of millimeters. But once you start wiring your brain to realize that there's going to be lag, it becomes a lot more more easy.
Yeah, you get used to the latency.
Yeah. And we're going to do this full size with the SEMA X5s. Before, I know, people like to say, no, I just want to fly the big thing. We want you to fly the big thing.
No, I'm scared to fly the big thing. I'm crying because I'm frightened.
And actually, yes, White Spy says it's throttle management. It absolutely is throttle management. If you don't have throttle management, you will go full speed and then no throttle. And then full speed and then no throttle.
And then there's no control.
And it's entertaining to watch, but it's not no control.
Burke believes that it's my thumb ring that's throwing everything off. Is that possible?
That's probably it. I think there's radio signals coming out of that.
It's getting in the way of fine motor control.
Okay. When we come back, I do want to show you a little something that I found at CES and was able to take home. It was on my swag day.
Oh,
the last day of CES is always my swag day. But before we do that, I want to take you back in time to back to the Brick House, because there was a time when we just decided to fly, and that's what we want you to do with us. So without further ado, let's fly.
Sick beats, Padre.
And actually, I've gotten a lot better at flying. That was just mostly just going up and down and just taking some. Now that I'm into FPV, the wave shots, I found that what's comfortable for my FPV is not comfortable for like a GoPro. Because if I fly as close to the waves as I want to with the GoPro, it doesn't look good because all you see is water. You actually have to be a little bit high.
Right, you have to get the context of everything.
That was the weirdest thing, because the first time I did that, I thought, oh, this is going to be sick because I'm like diving between crests.
And right.
When I played it back, I'm like, this is boring.
Right. And kind of hard to follow.
It's super hard to follow. So I'm like, you actually need to be at least like 15 feet off the water for you to get that feel of motion. But
that really makes sense.
That's fun. It's fun. And unlike someone else, I've never actually put a quad into the ocean.
Who did that? Who did that?
Actually, I designed something for him. It's it uses a little CO2 cartridge, and when it senses water, it inflates like a little vest. Just kind of floats around. All right, let's get away from that. Now, folks, you may remember this. This was one of my favorite products that we reviewed here on Know How in a while. This is the Anker Nebula. Anker Mars Nebula. They've bought multiple brands. This is a 3,000 lumen projector, portable projector. Lasts for 3 hours on a single charge. Does wireless, runs Android, has a great remote control system, good UI, good performance. And it's one of these things where you could actually take into an auditorium and this could be your only thing.
Wow.
I mean, for the longest time when I was traveling professionally, I wish I had something like this.
This one is an Anchor, though. This is a JBL, right?
Well, no, this is. So that's JBL sound. So they contracted
with JBL sound.
Oh, yeah, by the way, the sound on this is actually phenomenal. It's quite good. It was a $600 projector.
Yeah, it was expensive.
That they did a really, really good job. Now, people complained, however, because this was stuck on an old version of Android. Because it's Android TV, basically. Mm-hmm. It's not going to update as quick as the regular Android. So what they did was they said, hey, how about we give you a newer version of Android in a smaller format? And they did it with this. This is the Anchor Nebula capsule. It's about the size of a soda can. It's actually smaller than a soda mm-hmm. can. And the cool thing about this, Jason, is it's actually running Android 7.1.
Okay.
So Android for TV, 7.1. This is 854 by 480 resolution. So it's not great, but it will scale down 1080p video into that format.
Okay.
It's only 100 lumen. So it uses a DLP chip. It's 100 lumen, about 30,000 hours before you're going to have to junk the unit. So that's nothing. 4 hours on a single charge. Has 360-degree sound. And by the way, the sound is actually really, really, really good. They've done a good job with that. It can be controlled via a remote control or, my personal favorite, if you go to the front view, Alex, and maybe bring down the lights a little bit because, again, it's only 100 lumen. Center that, baby. The cool thing is it has this thing called Capsule Connect where I can control it from my phone.
Wow,
now,
okay.
If you have ever been annoyed because you have to, like, use the remote control to type titles when you're searching for YouTube. Oh, yeah, it does all the apps. It has Amazon Video. It has YouTube. Now I can do it all just by, clicking. And I can use the onboard keyboard on my phone to be able to enter in a title. So when I'm looking for something, let's go ahead and increase the audio. The audio on this is actually pretty good. For such a small device, they've done a really good job of giving you 360-degree sound. It's not a sound tower, but, I mean, you would not expect that sound.
Yeah, it sounds pretty good. Will it actually make Electric Dreams a better show?
I saw your tweet. You're not impressed.
I'm just not feeling it.
You're not impressed. I mean,
I'm gonna stick with it, but two episodes in, I'm not feeling it.
That kind of bums me out because I was hoping that would be awesome. But, I mean, it's responsive, and it does run apps. It will run Amazon Prime. It is running Amazon Prime right now. It will run Netflix. It will run YouTube. It will run anything that runs on Android TV.
Yeah.
And I think the one thing that they did that I really, really like, and I hope they expand it to the Mars, is the ability to use the on-screen keyboard.
So, that's really nice.
The fact that I can type... Well, let me turn this down. That's way too bright for the camera. The fact that I can use the on-screen keyboard rather than hunting and pecking for individual keys,
yes.
They should do that for every device. Mm-hmm. This should be on the Roku. This should be on the Google
Absolutely.
Google
Give
TV.
The option of it because there is nothing worse than having to navigate an on-screen keyboard.
That's the worst thing. Yeah,
I
was at a family gathering for New Year's. And they wanted to watch Know How. I'm like, okay, that's kind of... I'm going to leave the room, but okay.
Yeah.
And I had to use that keyboard. K.
It's painful.
It's painful, whereas I can... And by the way, this also works with voice commands. So I can just... Oh, by the way. Blah, blah.
Yeah.
And it will find
it. That's nice.
So, yeah. Good job.
Right on.
Price... Okay.
Well, it's got to be less expensive than that.
It is. So that's $600. This is $349.
Okay.
I would like it to have been closer to $300. Now, $349 is not unheard of, and actually that's about right for a premium Pico projector. But for me, that's what that is. That is still a Pico projector. Mm-hmm. I can bring this into a bright room, and I will have a 3,000-lumen projector. That's still a 1,000-lumen projector.
Okay.
As nice as it is, you know, it's really for personal consumption. Or that's the projector you carry because you're in a jam and you just need to throw something up. They say you can get up to 100 inches. No.
Yeah, I'm wondering how bright that's going to be when you do that.
Yeah, my size for that would probably be about 28 to 30 inches. That's the sweet spot. And they say, between 28 and 100. I'm like, yeah, maybe 2 inches above 28. You can get larger if you have a screen, but most of the time you're going to be projecting against a wall,
right?
Which means no.
Which, and if you're projecting against a wall, oftentimes that means you want a brighter projector because the wall surface isn't nearly as clean and pristine as, say, a white projection projector.
Precisely. Now, this is just a first look. I'm actually going to give you an in-depth look at both of these. I want to put them side by side so people can actually see the pros and the cons of both. Honestly, I saw so many projectors, so many home theater units, so many portable projector units at CES, and a lot of them did not impress me. Mm-hmm. What I like about this is they're just solid. There's nothing on this that's a deal breaker. There were so many projectors that I'm like, oh, well, that one thing, the fact that it's running a 6-year-old version of Android, I ain't doing that. Mm-hmm. Or the fact that, it lasts for 30 minutes on a battery charge. No, I'm not doing that either. This is just good across the line. And then in some categories, it's spectacular.
I would hope for both of these that, Android is an updatable platform. Android TV is actually, like, there isn't a whole lot, if any, customization going on there.
Yeah.
So there should be a little bit more of a focus of not saying, well, the only way to get the most current version of Android is to get a different projector. That's not perfect. There should be a little bit more focus on updating the version of Android that's actually in this hardware. I hope that they'll do that.
Which, by the way, I am taking with me to Rome. I'm doing a little trip over the next week. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to take this on the plane and project on the...
Yeah, there's no movie on the plane, but I brought some.
No. Delta, thank you very much for doing this. They've started to list when they have the special premiere planes. Uh-huh. So, like, they have brand new A350s, which are really well outfitted. And they'll actually tell you that they've got the brand new A350s. But the ones I'm riding on when I'm going to and from Rome, the 787s, I love those planes. I know you're not a plane nut.
Nope, I'm not.
Alex is, and Alex knows how cool they are.
Yeah. That was a hearty head shake.
That's positive as Alex gets. He's kind of smiling right now. Now, before we go, we have a parting shot. Come on up. We have a guest in studio. You have to be on the camera, by the way.
Oh, okay.
He's from Reno. What was your full name again?
Eldon MacLean.
This is Eldon MacLean. He's got a little something that he wants to show to the know-how audience if you want to lay this out. This is a Duino kit that he got on Amazon, about $350. I really like this. I like this idea of giving somebody a kit that lets them do like the 1001 experiments that we used to have on Radio
Shack.
Oh, yeah,
look at that.
So you got your Arduino Nano in the middle here, but then you've got all these components that we've used over the years. Everything from switches to resistors to screens, ultrasonic sensor, rotary encoders. Now, you may balk at the price. Yeah, $350 is a lot, and you could buy... $300 is a lot, but... And you can buy all the components for a lot less. But if you want someone to actually enjoy putting things together, this is a great way to learn. And he said that, yeah, that's right. They've got like worksheets. So you can give little homework assignments to get people to build up their Arduino skills.
I
love the fact that it's in a briefcase. As a kid, when I was a child, I would have geeked out mightily over having one of these things.
Absolutely.
We may actually have to build one of these for know-how just because I'm liking this so much. But this is a custom PCB, so I don't know if I could do that.
But, yes, you can.
I mean, I could, but I hate those chemicals. They burn my lungs.
I
should probably stop breathing them.
That's really cool. Yeah. Thank you for bringing that in.
Thank you so very much. And thank you for being a long-time know-how. I'll get this back to you in a bit.
Right.
I know, he's got the Twit sweatshirt, so.
Super fast.
Now, before I fall into my CES flu coma, and I'm spreading it to Jason,
we do
have to make sure that you know where you can find everything. All the information for all of the segments that we did today, including the step-by-step instructions for testing the Alien X, the links for the projector, you're all going to find them at our show notes, which, Jason, where do we have those?
I think that you have them at twit.tv/KH.
Yeah.
Is that
about
right?
That's
about right,
yeah.
Okay.
Oh, there you're going to find all of our back episodes. You'll also find a subscribe button. If you want to support the show, that's where you go. In fact, you all know that the show is going to continue long after I'm gone, right? Because Megan and Jason are going to be taking it over. You're going to get a whole new side of know-how. I think it's going to be know-how 4.0. I can't remember.
I'm not sure what the revision number will be.
Yeah, we may have to work on that.
Yeah,
but go to twit.tv/KH and subscribe and support us. By the way, we do social We do the interweb.
Web, the web, social web, as social, they call it sometimes.
Yeah.
Or did a couple of years ago.
Specifically, we do the Google version. And yes, you can make all the jokes you want, but we like Google because there's actually content of quality on Google Plus when you can find it. Just go to Google Plus, look for Know How, ask to be added to the group. Very short approval process. That's how I keep out the spam accounts. Once you're in, you get access to over 12,000 Kitas. Those are our know-it-alls, people on every step of the Maker DIY journey. You can ask questions. You can answer questions. You can post pictures and videos of your projects. You can do everything you need to do to be a maker. By the way, that's not the only place we can be found on the social webs. That's what the cool kids are calling it, right?
Yeah, as well. I don't know if they're cool. They think they're pretty cool when they call it that.
Where do they find you?
Well, you can find me at Jason Howell on Twitter. I also do other shows here on the TWiT Network, Tech News Weekly with Megan Maroney. We do a bunch of interviews with tech makers and tech breakers, and then also All About Android. And that's on Tuesdays. And then this weekend, I'm doing the new Screensavers.
Yeah, yep. Absolutely. How about that? And you can find me at twitter.com/PadreSJ. If you follow me there, you can find out what I'm doing when I'm not in the studio, like being home, sick, in bed. And you can also find out about the third member of our crew. We miss him whenever he's gone. He's a good guy. We call him Sunshine. Sunshine, where do the people find you?
Excuse me, Padre, that's pronounced Alex. And I'd like to thank you for all the high burks I got in my absence the last 2 weeks.
By the way, I want to thank everyone from the previous weeks who wrote to Alex saying hi, Burke, because just seeing that, it lifted the flu right off my heart. It really did. Until next time, I'm Father Robert Ballas here.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And now that you know how,
don't get sick.